I'd like to welcome you to the Drinking Water Board meeting, and welcome to everybody. I do want to excuse our chairman, Paul Hansen. He has some family concerns that he's taking care of today, so I will be acting chair for the meeting today. And feel free to correct me. Okay. I think most everyone here knows us and Matt on the board. I think you know us. Okay. Turn it over to Ken for a roll call.
Paul Hansen. Betty Naylor.
Here.
Brett Chenoff.
Here.
Tage Flint. Roger Freidel.
Here.
Brad Johnson. David Sackerson.
Here.
David Stevens.
Here.
Mark Stevens. We have a quorum of five members.
Okay, so we're able to go ahead and conduct the business. The next item on our agenda is the approval of the minutes for our July 10th meeting. And should have reviewed those.
I make a motion that we approve the minutes of the July 10th, 2015 meeting.
Do I have a second?
I'll second it.
I have a motion by Roger, second by David Stevens. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Also, we have the teleconference minutes for August 20th. We've reviewed those. I'll accept a motion.
I move to approve those minutes.
I'll second it.
Okay. Motion by David Sackerson, second by Brett. And any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion approved. Our next item on the agenda is our Financial Assistance Committee report by the status report from Michael Grange.
The first item in the status report is for the state loan fund. As you can see on the first page, we currently have a little over $400,000 in the fund. Over the course of the next year, we're expecting an additional $6 million, almost $6.1 million. By August 1st of 2016, we're expecting $6.5 million in the state fund. For projects and for state match of our federal funds. The second page is an outline in detail of the projects that are currently underway using state money. The vast majority of those are planning loans or planning grants to municipalities within the state. We do have four construction projects currently underway. And then the third page is another breakdown of the money and where it comes from and where it goes as far as the state program is concerned. Are there any questions on the state program?
Questions from the board?
Okay. Next is the federal program. As of July 31st, 2015, the current balance in the federal program is $36,700,000 and a little bit. Over the course of the next year, should things go as they are currently moving in Congress, we're expecting an additional $15 million in new money as well as repayment stream. Through July 31st of 2016, we're expecting almost $52 million in the federal program. The next page outlines projects that are currently underway, several construction projects that were recently authorized, others that have been authorized and are in construction, and then proposed projects that are coming before the board today or in the future that we're expecting. We have quite a bit of money in the federal program, as you're very well aware. Are there any questions on the federal program?
Are there any that are nearing closing right now?
We are coming close on the Daggett County Dutch John project. They were scheduled to close this week, but they've had some difficulty with a property, I believe. They've had to reconsider a couple of things, and so they're looking at pushing that back a couple of weeks. And the others, White Hills is moving, but not very quickly. West Erta is reconsidering the alignment, I guess, if you will, of how things are moving for them and how they want to actually proceed. Erta Acres, if you recall, had originally expressed some willingness to move with West Erta and bring them on board, and that's now changed. So West Erta and other communities, Stansbury for one, are looking at other options to help West Erta. It will probably come back before the board to authorize any change of scope and alignment that will happen with that project. But they are still trying, but it's a difficult situation there for West Erta since they have so many difficulties with their system. There's not a lot of incentive there for another system to take them on as either a consecutive connection or an annexation. And so with the significant deficiencies that they have and the amount of money that it's going to take to bring them into compliance, it makes it more difficult to find a willing partner, if you will. And West Erta cannot handle it on their own, as you're aware from the discussions that we've had in the past. So Liberty Pipeline is progressing, but they're a ways away. And as you've seen on the agenda today, Hooper Water Improvement District has actually requested a deauthorization of their loan. They've withdrawn their application. So those are the four that are currently in process.
So will that Hooper money come back into the overall fund?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, that will add an additional $5.3 million back into that.
And that was already accounted for on our report, correct?
It's part of the $15 million. If you look on the first page of the federal report, it's part of that $15,454,000 in the purple. So that it'll simply switch from that category to the back up into the revolving fund account. So that'll go from that first figure in the orange, the $51 million, that will increase by the amount of the upper authorization. It won't change the $51 million at the bottom, but it'll just rearrange the categories a little bit.
Any other questions from the board? Okay, thank you, Michael. Moving on to our status, our priority project,
yeah.
Project priority list. Yeah.
Two new projects are being added to the project priority list. Greenwich is being added with 18.3 points, and their project is a new coronation building. Fillmore City is being added to the project priority list with 25.5 points, and their project is a waterline replacement. And the Financial Assistance Committee recommends that the Drinking Water Board approve the updated project priority list.
Okay. I'll accept a motion to add them to the project priority list.
I move that we add Greenwich and Fillmore City to the project priority list.
Second.
I have a motion by David Stevens, a second by Roger. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, they are added. That brings us to our federal funding for the Elsinore Town. That one is for Gary. And if you have people here representing Elsinore, they'd like
there.
To come.
Okay.
Okay. introduce yourselves, please.
I'm Valerie Hopper. I'm over the water department on our city council.
Okay. I'm Darren Robinson with Jones and DeMille Engineering.
Okay, we welcome you. Go ahead, Gary.
Okay. Elsinore Town is requesting a planning advance in the amount of $45,000 to prepare a capital facility plan. The scope would include growth projections, future build-out area, preliminary layout, hydraulic modeling, condition of their system, capacity analysis, storage, summary analysis, electrical efficiency, and future needs, development of future needs, and impact fee analysis. The local MAGI of Elsinore Town is 60% of the state's, which qualifies Elsinore Town for grant due to it being below 80% of the state's. So the Financial Assistance Committee recommends the Drinking Water Board authorize a $45,000 planning grant to Elsinore Town to fund a capital facility plan. Okay.
Comments? Anything else we need to know?
No, just that, you know, we have growth in our northern part of our city, and we need this because of the water flow that's going into that part and some other things that are needing analysis at the time, our fee structures and things like that.
Comments or questions from the board?
This isn't restricted just to that one problem. It's kind of a larger picture of, you know, what we're going to need into the future.
Possibly, yeah.
One of the things I noticed on here, and Bill, I'm going to also say that the Rural Water Users Association can really help you on your new structure, because it says a new structure plan will be for your billings and so forth, will be developed, and I believe that Dale could help a lot and his people with that. So engage the rural water users in that planning for your new billing structures and so forth.
Okay.
It's not easy to tell people they have to pay more.
Make your computer easier to use.
But they surely enjoy the improvements that you have after the initial shock of the rate structure. Right?
Yes, they do.
Okay, any comments, considerations? I'll receive a motion.
I make a motion that we approve the authorized $45,000 planning grant to Elsinore Town to fund the capital facility plan.
And a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. Any further discussion, questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion passes. So
thank you. Thank you so much.
That's good for looking ahead for your needs and getting that started now.
We have some areas that we knew were soon going to get growth, and so we're working on that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Next item on the agenda is Fillmore City. Julie? Oh, Michael?
Yes, I'm not Julie.
Okay.
And Julie's actually in Panguitch doing sanitary surveys this week, so.
Okay, and if you'll introduce yourselves, please.
I'm Eric Jensen with Fillmore City Council. I'm over the water. That's why I'm here today. Mayor Larson did ask to be excused. He was going to be here.
All right,
and I'm Doug Nielsen with Sunrise Engineering.
Okay. Go ahead, Michael.
Fillmore City is requesting $2,152,000 in financial assistance to replace approximately 26,000 feet of old leaking water lines. Total project cost is expected to be $2,552,000, and Fillmore City will contribute $400,000 towards the project. Their project scored 25.5 points on the project priority list. Fillmore City did recently complete a master plan. And within the plan, each of the components of the culinary water system were analyzed for current and 20-year demands. Distribution system improvements were identified in the plan based on hydraulic needs. This project, as I mentioned, involves replacing the 26,000 feet of pipe, both in the distribution and transmission water lines. Local MAGI for Fillmore City is $37,861, which is 94% of the state MAGI. The average water bill for Fillmore City, including secondary irrigation, is approximately $31 per month, which is 0.99% of their local MGI. They full loan at the calculated interest rate of 2.45% for 20 years would mean the city would need to increase their average water bill to approximately $33 per month, which is 1.04% of local MGI. And based on this information, Fillmore does not qualify for additional subsidization. The Financial Assistance Committee has recommended that the Drinking Water Board authorize a loan of $2,152,000 at 2.45% interest for 20 years to Fillmore City.
Okay. Comments?
We're trying to replace some existing problems we have with our system. This is actually about half of what we have in mind. We would like to do approximately the same amount to finish some other projects, but we're just not quite able to do that right now. We feel like this is better to break it in as phase one or and then do that second phase coming up. We have a third phase possibly with some a tank replacement down the road. So we've got some things we need to do in the system. We're just trying to get it done. So that's why they come to you.
And Marianne, okay, you've noted that Mark Stevens is here. Yeah. Okay. And you're okay with that, huh?
Yes. Yes, very much. So they've been great to work with. The staff have, and we've gone back to them quite a bit for help and assistance, and Julian, Mike, and the city have been very good to work with.
Good. Thank you. Discussion questions from the board? There's one thing on here that I noticed that I kind of look at, and that this is the first time that I've seen the population growth projection going out 45 years. It's current and then projected.
Right.
That's a long time.
Yeah, I hope you don't hold us to that.
Yeah. No, but you know, I look at these things, and that was, I think this is the one that's out the farthest on the population projection. So 45 years.
You know, I've lived there for 65 and not much has changed. So 45 may not be that far out. So.
Well, you're expected to increase about 4,000.
Yeah, good luck. Yeah, that's all I can say. Good luck.
Buy some property.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, we'll have the water system for it anyway.
All right.
Just a quick question to start doing kind of an informal survey. How old are the pipes that you're replacing, roughly?
That's a good question.
They'll be different ages.
Yeah, we have some cast we want to get pulled out, and we have some PVC that's causing us all kinds of grief. So the cast is actually holding up quite well, but it is starting to fail in some locations.
Old enough that it needs to be replaced, yeah. Probably older than I am, probably. We had one town that had the pipe was older than the town. Said, so how can that be? And we put used pipe in when we moved into town. Yeah. So, it's interesting. The railroad bought it, and that's what they'd done is they brought in used pipe to put water in the water pipes there. They put used pipe in. So.
Okay, and before we move to the board for a motion, Ken has a note also.
I received a call earlier this morning from Representative Merrill Nelson. He's a state legislator representing the Miller County area, and he wanted the record to show that he is very much in favor of this project and supporting it. And so I'm saying that so that the record reflects that he's very supportive of the project.
Well, that's great. That's excellent. First time I've heard that before. That's nice to have that representation.
Thank you, Ken. Any further discussion from the board? I'll accept a motion.
I move that the Drinking Water Board authorize a loan of $2,152,000 at 2.45% interest for 20 years to Fillmore City.
I'll second that.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Motion by David Stevens. Second by Mark Stevens. Was that correct? Okay. And any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Especially with your population growth.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I'll be around to worry about it. But.
With the earthquake, that'll be beachfront property, you know, pretty soon.
Bye.
Make sure you're on the east side.
Next item on our agenda is Hooper Water deauthorization. Michael?
Yes, thank you. On July 10th, 2015, the Drinking Water Board authorized a construction loan of $5,423,000 at 2.76% interest or fee for 20 years to Hooper Water Improvement District to replace 3 miles of 18-inch and 16-inch ductile iron pipe, as well as a 1,200-meter switch-out. That should be customer meters there. Cost of the project is estimated at $5.923 million, and the applicant was planning to contribute $500,000. The staff has received a letter from Hooper Water. The letter was received August 27, 2015, stating that Hooper is going to pursue another source of funding and wishes to withdraw the request for funding to the Drinking Water Board. This letter came in after the conference call with the Financial Assistance Committee, but staff believes that since it's a deauthorization, it did not need to go through the Financial Assistance Committee first. So staff is recommending the Drinking Water Board deauthorize the construction loan of $5,423,000 at 2.76% interest or fee for 20 years to Upper Water Improvement District.
So Michael, do you think that that's because they found a lower interest rate, or is it because of the federal money and the restrictions?
The letter that they sent us is included in the packet. They don't give a whole lot of information except to say that they are pursuing another source of funding. In my earlier conversations with Hooper, they said that a bank had offered them a better term, and they didn't elaborate. So I'm under the assumption that it's a combination of the two. The bank offered them a rate reasonable enough that it overcame the hassle factor that we've discussed in the past.
I know we were very specific in asking them, do you or are you aware of federal regulations?
Yeah.
They were positive on that response.
Yeah. I guess we could go back and ask them specifically, but
no,
when we talked to them, they didn't seem to be very interested in elaborating, so I don't know that they would respond any differently than they already have.
But, and we can't do any more than what we have.
No, that's right.
Discussion.
Wouldn't it be beneficial if we actually could chat with them just a little bit and find out how can they change so we can adjust our policies or whatever we need to compete?
Like I say, I can certainly call them back, communicate with them and ask them why, and let them know that it's the reason we're asking is to be able to adjust policy of the board accordingly. And you know, if we get vague answers, then we get vague policy from the board. If we get specific answers, then we can have more specific board policy dealing with whatever the reason was that they decided to pursue other funding. So I can definitely have that conversation with them, absolutely.
Okay, is there anybody opposed to that?
That's good, yeah.
As a direction from the board to chat with them, and like you say, Michael, if they're unwilling to respond, that's their choice, but it would be beneficial for us to understand. It might take some major changes in rules and
the way we, you know, because we've done everything according to the rules to be able to progress to this point with them.
Well, let me just say I'm not convinced that it's our job to compete with the private sector for loaning money. And, you know, if project can be financed through, you know, commercial banks or you know, private sources, I'm all for it. I don't think there's any real issue there. It is, I would like to, like everyone else, like to find out what their motivation was for doing that. Maybe Zions Bank's having a sale on 30-year loans for water project. I don't know. But, you know, I'd say more power to them if they can get a better deal somewhere.
And I think it comes back to the concern of the board with how can we spend federal money appropriately.
But I also understand that we should, you know, if we can get information, this could be fed back to EPA. And,
right. And
maybe that'll put some pressure on them to...
Right.
Modify the rules somewhat to make it more attractive.
And just for the board's information, I attended a Region 8
All-States meeting at the beginning of August in Denver. It was a two-day, actually it was a three-day meeting. The first couple of days were wastewater related, and the last day and a half were drinking water related. And I've had a number of discussions with our counterparts at EPA Region 8, and they asked me to elaborate on that during that meeting, and we brought that specific topic up, that and I actually termed it the hassle factor that we deal with, and other states are seeing the same thing. Whether or not EPA will generate rules or make changes, or whether they're going to leave that up to the states, we don't know.
Well, isn't it true that the EPA isn't necessarily the decider on what those rules are? Doesn't this come from a higher...
They could make rule changes, or they could suggest rule changes, statute changes to Congress to change the way things are worded in the enabling legislation. But you're correct. The states have, at this point, the latitude to set up their own programs and run the programs as they see fit. Mm-hmm. So anything that we do locally, anything that the board chooses to do would be completely up to the board without oversight from EPA, at least.
Well, I think we all know that the money could be spent on worthwhile, needed projects if we could just find a way to do it.
Right.
Okay. Any other discussion from the board? Okay, moving on.
We need a motion.
Oh, excuse me. Yes, we do.
Well, I'd make the motion that we deauthorize the construction loan of $5,423,000 at 2.76% interest for 20 years to Hooper Water Improvement District.
I'll second.
Okay, motion by Brett and second by David Sackerson. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. Okay. Bernie, you're the man. Next item on our agenda, and let's do these separately, is a request to adopt amendments to R309-550-10, which has to do with facility design and operation, transmission and distribution pipelines. And thank you for briefing this down into a 1-2-3 step for us.
You're welcome.
So that we didn't have to read all the red and all the cross outs and everything. Go ahead. Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Woohoo!
you got a bonus on that.
Go ahead.
Okay. So the first rule that I'd like the board to consider is 550, and specifically section 10. And 550, of course, deals with distribution system, distribution pipelines. And 510, the part of the rule that we are proposing to adopt amendments to, deals with water hauling. You may recall that at the July 10th Drinking Water Board meeting, the board authorized us to do the rulemaking. And what we did is we published the revised rule, the amended rule, in the August 1st Utah State Bulletin, and we had a 30-day comment period that ran from August 1st through August 31st, and we received no comments, positive or negative, on that. So there's no change that we need to make to the proposed amendments. So it would be ready for adoption, and just to refresh your memory, the amendment is very simple. It requires all water systems that wish to haul water, and that's a minority of the systems, but any water system that wishes to haul water would have to get the director's approval. And the rule now is mistakenly only requires 9 community water systems to do this. So this change would just require community and non-community, if they want to haul water, to get the director's approval. And I don't know if there are any questions about that.
I did have one question come to me by a water distribution agency, and that was, what is the effect on emergency water hauling?
Okay. It this probably will have no
effect on the way we handle emergency water hauling now. We have a policy, a guidance document in place that covers emergency water hauling. And it would permit systems to notify the director that they need to haul water in an emergency, but then fill out or any of the details after they start doing the water hauling. So if it's something that needs to be done immediately, they could get verbal approval to do it, and then they would fill in the details of how they're going to haul the water, who's going to haul it, how long it's going to happen, what sort of tests they're going to be doing. So it doesn't really have it really wouldn't affect that. The only thing is they would need the director's approval. And this really, this change really codifies the way we handle water hauling now. Anyone who wants to haul water, any water system that wants to haul water, they typically do get in touch with us beforehand, whether they're a community or not a community. It's just, the rule is just mistakenly written as it is right now.
Okay, now as the board considers this, it is a rule adoption. Any discussion or further questions?
Okay, proceed. So if there are no additional questions, I guess I would ask the board to authorize the division to make the amendment to R3095-5010 effective. And our effective date would be September 10th, 2015.
I'll make that motion. I move that the board adopt Rule 309-550-10 as written and outlined here with adoption date of September 10th, 2015.
Second.
And a second. Have a motion by Mark Stevens, second by Roger. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Rule should be adopted on September 10th.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, our next item on the agenda is request to begin the rulemaking to amend R309-520, facility design and operation disinfection. And it has substantive changes, so it does have to go through the rulemaking process. Bernie?
That's correct. And 309-520, the rule that governs disinfection of public drinking water, was last amended in August of 2013. And if you look through your package, the one that was highlighted in red, you'll see slight changes throughout the rule, but the majority of the changes are confined to two sections. 520-6, which deals with general disinfection requirements, and 520-7, which deals specifically with chlorine disinfection. And it looks like a lot of rules, or a lot of changes to those sections of the rules, but basically what we're trying to do is we're trying to make the chlorination requirements easier to understand and easier to follow for public water systems. What we did in the changes is we updated the rule, we reorganized the rule, and we made corrections where we found things that were inaccurate and needed to be corrected. So, just in general, what we tried to do in some of the major changes is in gas disinfection, we tried to make a distinction between systems that use large one-ton cylinders that are, large water systems. There are very few of them that use these, and the smaller systems use 150-pound cylinders. So we treated them a little bit different in the requirements that we have in the rule. And then the other thing, the same thing for water systems that use liquid sodium or hypochlorite solutions to disinfect. What we did in that rule is we tried to make a distinction, or in that section of the rule is try to make a distinction between water systems that handle this in bulk and water systems that handle it in small quantities. And so the systems that handle it in bulk, we're requiring more safety features. We would require them to have safety showers and eyewash stations. When they handle it in smaller quantities, we're not requiring safety showers, and we would require some sort of alternative eyewash be present for the safety of the operators. And then just general, like I said, clarifications to the rule. We had two informal internal reviews for this role. We had an internal review and an external review. And the review ran from June 30th to August 5th. We received a few comments, and we considered those comments and made some changes to what we had originally proposed. Those changes are shown in the rule right now that you have in your packet. And if you would permit us to go ahead and do rulemaking on this, the expected schedule would be in October 1st, we would publish the proposed rule in the Utah State Bulletin. We would have a 30-day comment period that ran from October 1st through November 2nd. And then we would return to the board on November 13th and either ask you to adopt the amendments formally or to consider changes if we got any comments that required us to change the rule. And so with that, are there any questions about what was included in your package that I can try to answer?
Questions or comments? The thing that I have highlighted in here is to make the rule easier to use.
And that is our intent, to make it easier to use, to make it easier to understand.
I have just a general question about rulemaking. I noticed one of our communities that just went on the priority list is looking for a new chlorination system. And so timing, I suppose, matters here. So this is more of a general question about how rulemaking interacts with projects. And so at what point, it sounds like you're moving quickly on this, it'll be a while, but if, for example, a project was being considered at the same time that the rule was changing, how would that, what side of the line would the project proposal fall on? Would it be new rules or old rules, or does it matter that much?
Well, I think in this case, it probably doesn't matter a whole lot, but it would depend on when the plans were being reviewed. So if the plans were being reviewed before this amendment went effective, plans would be reviewed based on the existing rule, and if they were reviewed after the amendment went effective, it would be based on the new rule. Chances are that it wouldn't have a great effect. It might have somewhat of an effect on if it were a larger system, but probably wouldn't have a great deal of effect in this case.
So it's incumbent on the consultant, say, to track the rules to make sure that they understand that things are changing and they need to pay attention to what's coming rather than...
Right, pay attention to the current rule. And when we review plans, if there would be a change, for instance, we had a change in 500 and it changed our waiver policy a little bit. We had that issue where on the, before July 15th, we had certain requirements for waivers that changed a little bit on the 15th. We tried to keep water systems informed about that when they had plans under review, or if they were asking for a waiver. When it changed, we changed some of our forms, so we sent out the new forms to them. But we try to work with them when there's a change like that.
You wouldn't want to create a situation where everyone's rushing to get their plans in for the rule changes.
No. And I don't think these changes in particular here we're talking about are so great that it's going to cause people to want to submit plans to get in under the old rules as opposed to the new rule.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and this is a substantive change, so it does require rulemaking. Any other questions from the board? I'll receive a motion.
Would you like me to mention what I'd like the board to do?
Oh.
We just
read the staff recommendation, but go ahead.
So if the board, I guess I'm asking the board to authorize division to begin rulemaking to amend R 309-500. 520, sorry.
I shall move. Second that.
Okay, I have a motion by Roger and a second by Mark Stevens. In the staff recommendation, it doesn't list the number of the rule. So does your motion include the number of the rule here?
Sure, yes.
Okay, make sure it's R309-520. Any further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion passes.
Okay. I can proceed to the last
You can
bill.
Go on to the last one, which is, again, a proposed substantive rule change for R309-500-6.
Okay, and this rule may look familiar to the board members because we just got done amending our 309-500. The most recent amendment went effective July 15th of 2015. And the reason we want to amend this particular section of the rule has to do with the plan submittal waiver program. We'd like the board to allow us to consider adding a new feature to the waiver program. The way waivers work now is a water system becomes eligible to request waivers. And then when they want a waiver, they apply for a waiver individually before the project's constructed. So it's done before construction and it's done individually per project. Based on some conversations that Ken had with one of our district engineers and some water systems down in Washington County, there was a suggestion that perhaps we would consider allowing waivers to be obtained for multiple projects and allow the waivers to be obtained after the projects were constructed. The reasons that the water systems wanted to do this is down in Washington County, there are some water systems that have rapidly growing areas. They're expanding quickly and they're having a lot of subdivisions added on. And it's hard for them to keep up, even though they have waivers, it's hard for them to keep up with the waivers on these projects because they're happening so quickly. And so we thought that if we could, you know, make sure that this is tracked and make sure that the waiver requirements are met, that this wouldn't be a bad idea. It wouldn't change the existing waiver program as far as systems being able to get a waiver prior to an individual project, but it would add one additional option for the B waivers. So there are two waivers, A and B waivers, but for the B waivers, a system would have the option of doing after-the-fact waivers for multiple water system projects. And so, I don't know if you'd like me to explain the difference between A and a B waiver, but an A waiver is you have a project that's in an approved master plan. So those projects would not be eligible for after-the-fact waivers. A B waiver is kind of like a categorical waiver. So these waivers are based on population of water systems and diameter of pipe size. So small water systems can only get waivers on pipes that are up to 8 inches in diameter. Medium-sized systems can get waivers on projects that install pipes up to 12 inches in diameters. And large systems over 50,000 customers can get waivers on for pipes that are installed up to 16 inches in diameter. So any one of them would be eligible as long as they fit into that category. But we would make some requirements, and that's included in the rule. One of the requirements is that they would keep ongoing track of these projects. So they would have to keep track of these as they were being built. And they would have to make this list available to the division, and whenever the division wanted to see what projects were going to be included in the waiver. The way the waiver would work is at the end of each year, in January, by the end of January of each year, they would submit a waiver request for all the projects constructed in the previous 12 months. So in the previous January through December, they would submit a list. And it would include some basic information about each of the projects, name of the project, location of the project, size of the pipe installed, length of the pipe installed, how many service connections were installed for each of the projects. And so we think that that would be beneficial to these certain water systems where there's a lot of growth going on. It would reduce the burden of paperwork for waivers. It would be beneficial to us because I think it would be easier for us to issue the waivers. It would be less paperwork and time for us also. So the reason that this is happening so suddenly is if we're going to do this, we'd like to have this adopted this year so the waiver program could begin in January, because the way we've got this set up is it runs calendar year. So it'd start in January and run through December of 2016, and it would run in subsequent years. So because we're doing this rather quickly, we didn't do the typical informal comment period that we typically have. But we will have, of course, a 30-day comment period. And we had a brief internal comment on this, and some of our engineers did send this outside for review. We've got a few comments, but nothing that would cause us to change our recommendation at this point. So I know this is kind of sudden and maybe a lot of information, but if you have any questions, I would be glad to try to answer them for you.
So waivers just means reporting, tracking, and informing, correct?
Right. And what it does is, you know, typically when a water system has a project that they want to approve, they have to submit plans to us for review. And we allow waivers for distribution line projects, for certain distribution line projects. And that we still approve their standard specifications. They have to have a professional engineer that does the work and has to be responsible for the system. And they have to do hydraulic modeling to show that the project isn't going to disrupt existing customers or future customers. But it allows them to do basic projects without having to go through the plan approval process. And this just sort of streamlines it for them.
Questions, comments from the board? Staff's recommendation?
If there are no additional questions, I would like the board to authorize the division to begin rulemaking to amend R309-500-6.
I'll move that.
Second it.
Okay. That was Brett. Motion by David Stevens, second by Brett. Any other comments?
Do we get to talk about this again before it's passed?
Yes.
We do.
It comes back to the board.
We do.
Yeah.
All right. So
I can tell you.
Do it.
All right. I didn't mention this. If you'd like me to mention, this is be our proposed schedule if this goes through. We would publish the rule as it's shown in your package in the October 1st state bulletin. We'd have a 30-day comment period from October 1st through November 2nd, and then we will return to the board on November 13th to ask you to actually adopt the rule or to accept changes if we needed to make changes to it.
And you can move that quickly to get from November 2nd to November 13th?
That's no problem.
Okay, we do have a stand. Go ahead.
No, I don't anticipate it being a problem.
We do have a standing motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you. All right. Next item on our agenda is from the Rural Waters Association report. And I want to thank you for inviting us to your conference.
Glad to have you here. Let's see if I can do this without unplugging all the microphones.
Oh, pen.
You don't get one, Brett. You already got one.
I've got one.
Oh.
This one, too.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gail.
Are we allowed to accept them? So.
I think our $50 limit.
Yeah, I think it's come under that. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dale.
Anyway, yeah, thanks for coming up. I'm going to do the report today solo because the other three guys are working. I get to goof off and hang out with you guys. Ken and I seem to be hanging out together a lot lately. Anyway, we've got about 300 people. Shannon says exactly 300 people in attendance. That includes speakers, vendors, attendees. If memory serves me correct, we've got about 40 individuals taking the drinking water certification exam here at the conference. So, and that's a big part, and we want to thank the division and you all for allowing us to provide that certification training and exam. There's not a lot of places in the state where you can sit down in an intensive 2-3-4 day training session and then at the end of it take the exam, get through it. That's an important part of both of our conferences, and I know it's very appreciated by the water system personnel that participate in that. My pad's about to turn off. In your board packet, you have a report that we've done, and we do this every year for mainly for Sandy to, and the division to do some reporting to EPA. This represents the work primarily of two of the programs that we have funded through the Division of Drinking Water. There's not a lot of Kurt's program reflected in this because Kurt's dealing directly with the counties, and this is more water system oriented. So it's primarily Terry's program, the management program, and Brian's program, the compliance program, that's reflected here. And this is the year from July 1st, 2014 through the end of June 2015. It also does not reflect the work that is done by the other rural water personnel. Our five federally funded employees, our training personnel, all of that other work that is done with water systems. It's very similar to this, but somewhat different focuses. And you can see in that pie chart that the bulk of our work is done with operations and maintenance. Now, remembering that Terry, even though he's working primarily with management and is represented to a large degree with the orange and the gray, so still some of his stuff is compliance oriented, operation maintenance oriented, depending on what he gets drawn into with system visits. So we see that the bulk of our work is with compliance, and that's mainly Brian. Management and finance is doing the next biggest portion, and then operation and maintenance issues, which obviously fit into those other two. We also work to a degree with treatment, water security, and conservation. I think just given the nature of the industry right now, you may see that conservation piece of the pie grow over time as we look more and more at water conservation and energy conservation and all those different types of things. And then you can see all of the systems that those individuals have visited over the previous year. And that, you know, that's a pretty extensive list of water systems, and I would guess that those that have not been visited by these programs have been visited by our other programs. And remember that all of our folks are in communications with each other. If there's a compliance situation and Brian is not able to get there on his own, we'll get somebody else there. So it's not just that, you know, Brian's got to do it type situation. We'll get the situation taken care of one way or the other. And then the other the final portion of that is the operator certification, the number of systems that receive certified operators through our programs, 174 systems. One of the things that we've done, I think we've talked about it before, is that we have been offering online certification to individuals. So, for example, if somebody's up here this week, goes through the training, fails the test, in about 30 days, they can come to our office or we'll come to their water system and they can sit down with the computer and retake. Or those folks can just come in. They don't have to come up here and take the training. They can test whenever they want. There's rarely a week when we don't have two or three people in the office taking certification exams online. So that's been a very successful part of what we're doing. Questions?
I have a question about the conservation wedge in your pie chart. And you obviously have some conservation activities going on, and as that expands, do you think you're going to need to expand your staff to accommodate that, or can you fit that in your operation?
I don't see that at the moment. Now, yeah, that's a good question. I haven't really thought about that, but I don't see that need at the moment. There may be one of the things that we are in discussions with, and that we will do in the coming year. You know, we've been offering water rights certification through the Division of Water Rights. And out of that, we began to sit down and talk to Division of Water Resources about doing a water conservation certification program. And they're pretty excited about that idea. Chris Hunter, who is our certification trainer and fee-based trainer, will be putting that program together. And it's just in the gestation stages right now. We're looking at subjects. We're looking at instructors. We'll probably come up and ask some people from the university because there's some of that's got to be somewhat agricultural oriented. When you're talking about outdoor watering and that type of conservation, I'm excited about it. I think it'll be a good program. I think it will bring, and we're talking about two forms of certifications. Individuals will come in and be certified on water conservation. And then if they take that knowledge back to their water system and implement and can show the Division of Water Resources that they have completed tasks with their water system as far as water conservation, then that water system will become certified through the Division of Water Resources. So I think it'll be a pretty effective way of doing it. And like I say, the division is excited about the idea, sees it as helpful, and will move the idea forward. So anyway, just one of those other things. We don't just work with you guys. We do work with the other water folks in the state as well. So, we try.
Go ahead.
Certification, you mean an additional certification?
Yeah. This won't be, the drinking water certification that we do for the Division of Drinking Water is required by EPA. It's required by the division. This is not a required certification. It's similar to our utility management certification, our water rights certification. It's just a certificate that an individual can go through this process, learn, and then pass the test. And then if I work for Moab City, I can come to you and say, Mayor Dave, I did this. I'd like to help the city do a little bit better in its conservation methods because now I know what I'm doing. B, why don't you give me a raise? Because now,
like a reward system, so the city becomes a water-wise
right, exactly.
City.
What the system certification will be.
Okay.
And then they'll get recognition on that level for implementing these ideas that this individual is looking
for. Tree City USA.
Yes, that's the whole idea. And we're hoping, with the other thing that we're doing, I hope I'm not taking too much time, but the other thing that we've been doing is having some very serious discussions up at the division. We've got water resources, water rights, emergency management, a whole group of people looking at drought mitigation and planning for drought mitigation, which when I went into it, when I implemented the idea, I was thinking drought mitigation and conservation were somewhat similar. Through these meetings, I've come to realize they're not. They're not at all. Water conservation goes along all the time. Drought mitigation is something that happens in a given year or two to take care of a very specific bad problem. And so we will be coming to this group in the future. I'm going to have to sit down and write a manual. And we'll be coming to you for your support on recommending to water systems that in addition to their emergency response that they currently have, their emergency response plan, that they do an addendum to that plan, that addendum not be protected the way the emergency response plan is, but be a public document, because these are things that the public are going to have to be involved in. We probably won't call it a water conservation plan. We'll call it a water shortage plan, because I'm looking at doing a plan. Whereas if all of a sudden the primary source well goes down and they've got to scramble to make up for that, this plan will work just as well. But I think that's an important part of what we're doing, so that we're emergency management is it thinks it's a very important part of what we're doing to make sure that systems are ready for that eventuality, and some are and some aren't. So,
good point.
Thank you all once again. Thanks for being here. Hope you get a chance to hang out with us and do whatever we do. Thanks.
Dale, just one question. Is your attendance up or down or about the same as in previous years?
No, we're up. Our numbers are up. Yeah. And, yeah, which is a good thing. You know, we dropped off a couple, 2-3 years ago when the recession hit for whatever reason. And, yeah, this is the biggest one we've ever had up here. So that's a good sign.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks for the pen.
Okay. Next on our agenda is our director's report. I'll turn it over to Ken.
Thank you. Several events recently, and you've seen this in the news, the Gold King mine spill, and EPA got a black eye for it, and there was a lot of press and a lot of political figures expressing their concern over how EPA handled the situation. Wanted to brief this board relative to the impacts of drinking water systems in Utah. But to set the stage, there was that breach. 3 million gallons of mine waste went into Cement Creek. That flowed into the Animas River in Colorado. There were Colorado systems that were significantly involved because the concentrations were very high. Then it joined with the San Juan River, and in New Mexico, again, water systems significantly impacted. It flowed, the San Juan River flows into the southeast corner of Utah, and it first impacted Navajo-owned water systems. Now, the Navajo Nation, as a tribe, is the only Indian tribe in the country that has primacy. They are like a state agency in administering the federal law. There were two systems, Montezuma Creek, and they just relied on the storage that they had available and didn't use their source waters from the San Juan River. And the town of Alcheta, they actually had water brought in from other Navajo water systems to help them out. By the time the San Juan River flowed into San Juan County, there were three drinking water systems that we regulate that were impacted. First, Sand Island, which is a recreational facility, Mexican Hat and Bluff. All three of these systems use wells as sources of water supply, and we're not directly drawing in from the San Juan River. With sampling that the Division of Water Quality, a sister agency of ours, did of the San Juan River in Utah, it showed that total metals exceeded drinking water standards, but the dissolved metals were below the drinking water standards. So as such, with infiltrations that may occur over time with the wells serving these three systems, it is unlikely that they would be exceeding standards because it would just be the dissolves that would be metals that would be transferred into the wells. And it would be a long-term effect. It wouldn't be immediate. And there is, particularly with Mexican Hat and Bluff, ongoing monitoring that they must do that will help us see if there is an impact over time. This is one that we, a bullet that we dodged, whereas Colorado systems and New Mexico systems did not dodge that bullet. Eventually, the San Juan River will flow into the Colorado that goes into Lake Powell. There is a surface water source, Height Marina, in Lake Powell, but at that point, with the dilution that's coming from Colorado River, it's likely that they would not be impacted. Although, just this morning we learned that there was an oil spill in Lake Powell, and we're trying to find out if Height Marina is impacted by that. We sent out emails to the local water operator and haven't heard back yet. But I'm sure they're watching that and well aware of it. like to talk next about a meeting that occurred last Thursday, August 27th. This is before the Tax Review Commission. This is a commission that is appointed by the state legislature, and they seem to have a very well understood, at least among commission members, agenda that they should follow. And that agenda is to do away with the sales tax monies that are going to the different state agencies. There's part of that sales tax money that goes to agriculture, and this committee voted to recommend to the legislature that agriculture's money would not be coming from sales tax monies. The Division of Drinking Water and Water Quality within the Department of Environmental Quality were scheduled to present on the 27th, and we did. Also, within the Division of Natural Resources, there was the Divisions of Water Rights and Water Resources also scheduled to present on August 27th. We ran out of time. They grilled Walt for an hour, and then they grilled me for an hour. And after that grilling, we were well done. But the result was that they did not vote to recommend that the sales tax monies be taken away from the Division of Drinking Water or the Division of Water Quality. What they proposed, and this is not a final decision, it's only a recommendation that would then go to the legislature. It would have to be the legislature that would act. But their recommendation was is that the program sunset in 5 years. And that in the interim, that and interim is a key word here, the Appropriations Committee that we report to, not during the session, but in the interim between sessions, report and explain the program, and they do that before, they recommended that the two divisions do that before the legislature meets in January, and lay out the program and defend the program and defend the use of the sales tax monies. Then every other year thereafter, we do the same thing. And on the fifth year, the Appropriations Committee could terminate it or extend it for another 5 years. That was the substance of the recommendation. I've got in the packet a handout. There is, if we lose these monies, a domino's pushed over, this hits another domino and another domino and another domino. If we lose the sales tax monies, that's the money that funds the state's revolving fund. And these are the state programs that the board administers.
That's the 1/16 of 1%?
Yes. Right. And we get 1/16 of 1% of the sales tax monies, and it is capped. We don't really get that much because it's capped. We get less than 1/16 of 1%. It is decimal dust in the state budget coming from the sales tax monies.
Ken, can I ask a question? Is that the, sure, the $3.6 million?
Yeah, that is the cap.
So we every year we get $3.6 million that are capped that amount.
Yeah, we go up to that. The assumption is if they collect less taxes, we would get the 1/16 of a percent. But right, typically the sales tax, 1/16 of 1%, is quite a bit higher than that. And that goes to other places. If we lose that, we lose the capability to match the federal SRF monies, which means we don't get the federal SRF monies. In federal statute, and this is the first red typing in this, it lays out where the division can, in federal statute, take monies from the federal SRF program to do specifically specified functions. In essence, it funds part of our division's staff, a significant part of it. So if we lose those SRF monies, the next domino is we lose quite a bit of our staff. If we lose quite a bit of our staff, we don't have the wherewithal to state that we can do all of EPA's programs. So then we lose a second grant from EPA, which more staff wants. And when we give up primacy, because we don't have staff, EPA could take the SRF monies that is allocated to the state of Utah, which is $7 to $9 million, you know, and they could implement the Federal Safe Drinking Water Act in Utah using those funds. So in other programs, when you talk about the loss of primacy, there isn't really a way to fund EPA handling that. In the drinking water program, there is a definite fund that EPA could use. So it's a serious endeavor, and we're watching this closely. There is some contact made by others, and it's because in a meeting a week before the 27th, we had a meeting with the governor's Office of Management Budget. They claimed that the governor was against using sales tax for water projects. But later that week, the department director, Alan Matheson, had a meeting with the governor and with the director of the governor's Office of Management Budget, where the governor clarified that that was not true. Well, it wasn't true what he clarified, put it that way, that he is supportive of using sales tax monies for water projects. So the director of the governor's Office of Management Budget at the August 27th meeting testified that the governor's Office of Management Budget was doing a lot of studies on water projects for and water issues for the whole state, but didn't make the clear declaration that the governor is supportive of this, which we expected she would. She did not. And so anyway, that's the result of the actions. We've got some breathing room, but we need to have an oxygen tank nearby.
Who pushes for this? Is there somebody in the House or the Senate or is it the State Tax Commission? Who pushes it?
The State Tax Commission can only recommend to the legislature. It's Senator Stevenson out of Draper that organized it and kind of put the agenda for the Tax Commission together. And the thing that is a little frustrating to me is there's a push to do this, but the assurance that, well, it would just be replaced with general funds. But if we take it away from sales tax, it'll go to education. It'll go to highways. And we'll get less than the crumbs that we're getting now. So
you'd have to compete.
Get right. Aligned with everybody else.
Yeah.
But think of the time and expense it takes to prepare and to compete.
Surprise.
And do that every year, right? It'll be every year or every other year that you'd have to do that.
Of course, the assumption is we don't do anything anyway, so we might as well do that.
That's the assumption.
Anyway.
Can we blame Obama for this, or is it just our own mess?
Clearly, it's his fault.
Not to be recorded.
don't put that on me.
That was Roger.
He's going to send locusts at you.
So, in another meeting, this is with the Water Development Commission, another commission. It was on August 18th, and they wanted to know about the loan programs, and I had a maximum of 5 minutes. I just told them that there's a state program, a federal program. The federal program has a lot of red tape. The state program does not. More attractive, particularly for smaller systems. And these systems are generally pleased with the assistance given by the board. And I think I went over my 5 minutes with, you know, explaining those issues. Finally, there is a fee hearing, and there's information about it in the packet. It'll be on September 10th in the boardroom in the department's building at 1 p.m. There is a slight change to the slight change in our proposed fees. Last year, we proposed a plan review fee that dealt with the size of project and how much, and it certainly would not cover all the costs associated with plan reviews, but it was a way of generating additional monies. That whole section of fees associated with plan review was not approved by the legislature. The only thing that was approved was a penalty fee for construction without prior plan approval. So we're, the line that talks about that has reference to the fees that would be charged, but that was not part of our fee schedule, so we're clarifying that it doesn't refer to fees that were not charged. But we also proposed changing it from a penalty fee to a cost recover fee. The difference between the two, a penalty fee, the money goes to the general fund, and a cost recovery fee would cover the cost of the informing the system, dealing with the appeals process, dealing with construction that's non-conforming, you know, those issues, and cover our costs associated with that. And so that'll be part of the hearing. And just wanted you to be aware of that. And that's all I have.
Okay. Thank you. Does the board have any other issues that they'd like to bring up at this time? Well, our next board meeting will be Friday, November 13th, 2015, 1 p.m. at the offices. Motion to adjourn?
So moved.
And
second.
Motion passes with all the ayes, right?
Aye.
And we appreciate you staff and you attendees that have been here, and thank you for all that you do. And Paul is not the absent anymore.
I can't think that's behind it. They want to spend the money on something.